Ryan dreamed. Across a vast, dusty plain approached rank upon rank of men. Sunlight glittered yellow off their breastplates and funnel-shaped helmets. They carried bows. Before them trotted other men, half-naked, bearing tall, curved shields, brightly painted. Ryan shifted his grip on the hilt of the bronze sword in his hand. The leather windings were wet with sweat. A round wooden shield was strapped to his other arm. To left and right of him stood ragged lines of men, clutching spears and wearing heavy quilted cloth for armor. It didn't seem fair, somehow. The advancing ranks halted. The shield-bearers scuttled out before the armored bowmen and planted the shields on the ground. Sling-launched rocks bounced futilely off them.
Charge!
Ryan and his men began to run forward. Arrows rose like smoke from the bearded men, then fell among Ryan's charging companions. Ryan felt one strike into his thigh, stinging like a serpent's bite.
Ah, fuck!
He ripped it out using two fingers of his sword hand and threw it aside. But he felt other impacts, other deep-biting stings. He stumbled. His breath turned to jagged glass in his chest. He tried to force himself on, but his muscles wouldn't respond. Then he was running forward across what had been a broad field of grass. It was trampled flat now, and huge patches were stained dark red with blood. The forms of men wearing uniforms in pale brown and gray lay in singles and in clumps. Some of them still moved and screamed. Thin sounds whisked past his head. He heard one terminate in a meaty thud, heard a moaning gasp from the man who ran behind him, sensed that he tumbled headlong in the blood-matted grass. Ryan had a long blaster in his hands, heavy and ungainly, with a big lock on the side, with a heavy curving hammer drawn back above a percussion cap on its nipple, just like on Doc's Lamar revolver, but much larger. They were running toward a wall of ridge topped with an unbroken bank of thick, dirty white smoke, through which stabbed little daggers and great broad blades of flame. The thunder of the cannon and the rifles drowned all other sound. Directly in front, a fire flower unfolded, huge, though it was hundreds of yards away. He saw the white cotton ball puff of the bursting charge, and heard the sound of the cloud of musket balls launched by the shrapnel shell even before they reached him and the men to either side, like the sighing of wild goose wings, like the arrows of the Assyrians. Red, searing pain.
Christy!
Peace, Ryan Cawdor.
What?
This time he didn't fall into blackness. Instead, he hung suspended in white brilliance. The soft voice was familiar. Out of the dazzle, a shape resolved. It was one of the little squat humanoid muties he had seen during his earlier bout of wakefulness. The thing was walking on his hind legs with an odd, waddling gait. He seemed bent by more than his natural body structure, and the fur on his muzzled half-human face was largely silver. But the brown eyes seemed both warm and wise. Somehow, he didn't seem ridiculous at all.
You dream.
Ryan already knew that.
We little ones have learned much of the ways of healing in all the snows and suns since men made us. Some of us have learned as well to walk in the world behind the world. I am one. I am called Farwalker.
So maybe he hadn't been dreaming before. But it was hard to accept. Human-Ewok hybrids? Who talked American and called themselves little ones? No way. Likely he had been dreaming, and dreamed still, and would too soon be awakened by the pain of a raven stabbing out his remaining eye with its beak.
No. Rest easy, Ryan Cawdor. You are as safe as you can be anywhere in the world. We who cannot fight have learned to hide quite well.
What do you want?
That you help us. But first, that you heal. And to do that, you must rest.
I'm asleep, aren't I?
You sleep, but you do not rest. You struggle constantly.
It's the way I am. And there's someone I need to fight my way back to.
You fight only yourself.
The little stubby arm gestured. Ryan saw more clearly the enemies he had battled against in his dream. They all had long, curly black hair and a single piercing blue eye each, staring at him from scarred, sun-bronzed faces.
Fuck me.
With our assistance, your body can heal you quickly and well, But your spirit must not fight against itself.
How could I not fight?
A wise and cunning man such as you should know the answer better than anybody. Did not your own mentor say, there is a time to fight, but more important was the time when you decided not to fight?
But how do I do it?
Let go. Free yourself and let yourself fall, not into blackness, but into light.
Is this one of those near-death things?
It will be an experience of death considerably closer than near if you continue to fight yourself. We are at the crisis. You block your own body's attempts to heal.
All right.
He shut his eye, exhaled, made the tension and resistance flow out of him. Then he was the light, and the light was him, and consciousness went away.
You gonna shoot me?
The man in the dark coat laid his wrench on the floor and straightened slowly.
If you are, why don't you just get to it and save me the suspense, lady?
Not if you do what I tell you.
All right.
Step back from the machine.
Hands held up before his shoulders, palms toward her, he obeyed. Watching him intently, lest he whip out some holdout weapon and chill her, she moved forward for a closer look at the object he'd been working on. Though she was no lover of tech, it was obvious this was a marvel. As she had seen from a distance, it was a platform 6 or 7 feet long and about 3 wide. It had a seat at one end, made of plastic-looking mesh slung over a tubular metal frame. A square-section metal post jutted from the base of the platform at a forward angle, holding up a pedal set. A chain was looped around the crank and vanished into a slot in the base of the platform. There were various low housings that looked like compartments or built-in chests. Spindle limbs, actually tapering tubing frameworks, sprang from the corners and angled out to hubs. Beyond these were large narrow wheels that looked like metal, with wide spokes. Really more like big discs that had been cut out, probably to save weight. Mounted outside these were simple spoked bicycle tires. She realized the cutout discs were spacers set to fit just inside the rails and keep the actual tires rolling smoothly along the work-hardened and polished track. There was no provision for steering the WAG that she could see. Likely it didn't need such. This was a machine meant to go where the rails went. She raised her head and looked at him. She had never allowed him to slip fully from her awareness, nor her peripheral vision, which was better at detecting slight movement than direct vision anyway. He had to have made this thing. From the way his eyes flicked from it to her and back again ceaselessly, the way his grayish tongue kept slipping out to moisten his lips beneath the mustache that swept down either side of his mouth, she knew that had to be true. It struck her as almost perverse that anyone would even think of doing so, much less lavish the time and effort, the love required to craft such a mechanism. She couldn't help marveling.
I'm taking this. I won't hurt you if you don't try to stop me.
So you're just gonna rob me, just like that, huh? You don't seem the type.
She frowned. She wasn't the type, but she didn't exactly welcome him reminding her of the fact. She jabbed air in his direction with her long blaster.
Don't get in my way.
Got no intention of doing that, let me assure you. But what exactly are you gonna do with it?
She looked at the machine. She looked at him, then looked back at the machine. It was as light as he could make it, she didn't doubt, but she could also tell it had to weigh several hundred pounds at least, especially with provisions packed on board. The man who stood across it from her was an inch or two shorter than she, and skinny. Even allowing for the greater efficiency of his masculine muscles, if he could manage it, so could she. If she knew the same tricks he did.
Go ahead.
What?
Try it. Try and pedal it. See how far you get.
Yeah. Sure.
Her first thought was naturally that the WAG was booby-trapped, but none of her senses, none of her experience of human body language, could detect the least quiver of threat from him. What she got, remarkably, was pride. He wanted to show off his marvelous toy.
Don't try anything.
Wouldn't think of it.
He was grinning openly now, his teeth a crooked jumble in the kerosene light. Holding down on him with one hand, she slipped into the seat. It was very comfortable. She put her feet on the pedals. They fit fine. Apparently, his legs were about the same length as hers. She pushed. Nothing happened. It was as if the crank was welded in place. Scowling, she dropped her boots off the pedals and leaned forward. She took hold of a pedal and pulled. It rotated back at her, as if mounted on glass bearings. She pushed. Rock solid.
See? You don't know how to make it go. What are you gonna do with it?
Are you triple stoop?
She shouldered her blaster and aimed it at the bridge of his nose, right where a dirty piece of tape held the heavy glass frames together.
You jack me around, I'll chill you.
Go ahead, ice me down. I'll sure teach you a whole lot about how to run the thing when I'm dead.
Her muscles spasmed with fury. She dropped the point of her aim to just south of the buckle of his belt. She felt a dirty thrill to see his eyes widen slightly.
I can shoot you without killing you. I can make you want to tell me.
Maybe you can and maybe you can't. I'm no fighter. Furthest thing there is from a cold heart. But I might be a tougher nut to crack than you think, Missy. See, that's my invention. I call it a yawl. Even if I did tell you how to make it go, then what? You know how to fix it when it breaks? You know what kind of traps the muties or even the norms will lay to catch you? You know how to live through a chem storm, riding out there right under the sky of the Deathlands?
Her eyes answered him. He nodded.
Anyway, if you won't drop the hammer on me for saying so, you don't rightly look the type.
You said that already.
But she ended up backing up off the machine anyway. She thought her heart had gone cold as the heart of a burnt-out star. Cold as chilled titanium. She saw now it wasn't so. Not all the way through, anyhow. She drilled the deserters Ben and Matt without a thought or a single regret. She'd do it again and have dinner if she were hungry. If they were hunting her or hers, she would chill them from cover without giving them a chance to defend themselves, and her sentient scarlet hair wouldn't so much as stir. And what she would do if she caught the general, or his fine young captain, or any of his sergeants and merry men. But she couldn't put this man down in cold blood, much less torture him. Ryan could have, probably. If it was what he had to do to save himself and his companions. He could be a stone chiller as the coldest cold heart. She had loved him for that too, along with so many other things. But even now, a woman bent only on revenge, she couldn't.
And anyhow, why do you want to go and steal what might just be an offer for free, Christy Roth?
You know my name?
Appears I do, since you answer to it.
How?
Shit, I've been around. Kind of like you and your friends. Can I put my hands down now? Not like you need a blaster to kick my skinny butt anyway. Like I said, I ain't no fighter.
Damn.
She clicked the safety back on and slung the M16. He was right. She didn't need it to take him. But she knew that wouldn't be an issue. She didn't fear him rabbiting on her either. She doubted he would voluntarily be separated from his marvelous machine.
You know my name. Would you mind telling me yours?
Pretty lady with a long blaster can call me anything she likes, except late for supper.
He grabbed the left breast of his open shop coat and held it up.
See? My name's Paul. Just like it says here.
She leaned forward slightly and squinted. The name tag was filthy, but she could only just make out, embroidered in red on once white, the name Paul. Right enough.
That's as in Paul the Rail Ghost. Maybe you, heard of me?
Can't say as I have. But I guess I'm pleased to meet you anyway, Mr. Ghost.
Just Paul is fine. They call me the Rail Ghost because I go everywhere the rail does, which is everywhere at all, and people scarcely ever see me. And never can catch me.
Until now.
Here you're better than most. You and your friends. Where are they, anyhow?
Her brow furrowed suspiciously. Then it smoothed. She suspected the man could be as devious as anybody at need. She could not honestly suspect he was being so now. It just went against what all her senses told her.
It's a long story. We got separated.
Huh. So, you're chasing after Magog to go and get him back, huh?
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.
You're listening to Vengeance Trail from the Deathlands series, produced in Graphic Audio. It's a movie in your mind. But what do you do when the show's over and you're wondering how to get your next Deathlands title? They're sold in truck stops across the U.S. and Canada, but they do go fast. If you can't find Graphic Audio there, we've got a number for you. 1-800-670-5220. That number and a phone are all you need to experience again the intensity of more Deathlands in Graphic Audio. When you call and order, we'll send your selection right away, so you can look forward to your next Deathlands in Graphic Audio, mile after mile. Just call 1-800-670-5220. Our customer support folks have a large selection of unabridged Deathlands titles, all produced in the same amazing Graphic Audio you're listening to right now. Call 1-800-670-5220. Our number is also conveniently printed on the cover of all of our audio thrillers. If you're on the road for months at a time and want your order to be sent to an oil desk at a truck stop on your route, just let us know, and we'll be glad to ship it there for you. Deathlands in Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind. Due to intense violence and sexual situations, Graphic Audio is rated for mature audiences.